This is Hard Parking, sponsored by Right Honda and Right Toyota out of Scottsdale, Arizona. Of course, I'm your host, Jay Finning, recording from my home studio in Gilbert, Arizona, on a rainy day. Got some updates for the little car. You know, I had mentioned that I had some gas issues, and I put a fresh tank of gas in there, and then the issues went away. The car was basically stalling at stops, stoplights, stop signs when you come to a stop to turn, when the engine would warm up. And I thought I got rid of it when I put gas in there, but then it came back. But this weekend, I went ahead and bought some of that gum out high mileage stuff. I watched some YouTube video where they're going through the things that worked, things that didn't. It's got high mileage, 188,000 kilometers, 92,000 US miles. So I put it in there and I drove to my friend Will's house and I drove back and the thing ran smooth. So, you know, virtual knock on wood that's just what the trick is, because I really don't feel like taking that thing apart and working on it. I'd rather spend money on other things like new wheels, things like that. I've had a real funky issue around here. It's been a while since I've talked about it, but you know how we kind of completely redid our backyard and it looks really nice, but there's still a lot of like small little things that need to be fixed, and they're going to get fixed. The contractor that we worked with, they're really easy to work with, stand behind their work. But I had an issue with the sprinkler. So what we did is we got rid of the main sprinkler lines in the backyard and left the drip lines. Actually, they ran new drip lines. We don't have grass back there anymore. We have one tree that gets the drip. It's the pomegranate tree. Actually, there's an orange tree back there as well. But we just completely redid the backyard. So what happened was when they completed the job, the drip lines in the back worked. The main sprinklers in the front worked, but the drip lines in the front didn't work. So there's three. So they came back out and they kind of messed with it. Took like a week or two. Then they got the drip lines in the front working and the regular sprinklers in the front working. But then the drip lines in the back didn't work. So I told them, hey, something's going on. You guys need to get back out here. So I went out and did my own test because it's not rocket science to kind of do some of this stuff. So in testing, I ran the front because I was trying to figure out which one of these valves was busted. So the front yard went just fine. And then when I tested the backyard, I went to go look at the drip lines and then I went back to the shed and there was water everywhere. I go, whoa. So I turned the water off. I called them. They came out and I go, you know, how did this happen? These are the new lines you guys ran. And I got the story. Yeah, well, the lines broke because, you know, we installed them on brittle lines. It's really easy. We'll just add a new coupler. Everything will be taken care of. Super easy fix. I said, okay, cool. I come out here. They fix it. A week later, I have water all over the place again. There's a busted line somewhere. And we can't move the shed because the shed is permanently attached to the ground. It's a big, heavy shed. It's like 14 by 10 or whatever. Maybe even 16. I think it's 14. But the original lines ran under the shed. So the guy looks at me when he's repairing it. He goes, do you have dogs? I go, no, I don't have dogs. You don't have dogs back here? He goes, no, I don't have dogs. It looks like these are bite marks in your drip line. So I'm looking at it and I go, oh, those are weird looking marks. I'm thinking they're exploding out marks because a dog's tooth would puncture it and it would push down into it. Think about how a bullet goes in one way and comes out the other way. The side it comes out leaves a big mess. The side it goes in leaves a small hole. That's where my brain was thinking. I don't even own a gun. So they replace the lines. Everything's good. I watch them test it. I test it. A week later, water everywhere. So I go back there and I start looking at myself because this thing, when it spews, we were watering the whole block. Like there's that much water. So I go back there and I'm looking at it and I'm looking and I go, oh, there's these holes again. I go, wait a minute, these holes, this isn't normal. There's no way there's defective poly line. Poly line is the line that you run your drip lines off of. They're about half inch diameter, 0.570, I think is the measurement on there. I'm looking at them. These are teeth marks. There's a rat over there, and the rat keeps chewing through the water line. And it never happened before because the water line was buried. Now it's exposed. And so I started looking on Google and researching and watching all these videos, and sure as shit, I'm right. The sound of the water drives them crazy. They start biting into it to get to the water, or maybe just the sound. But what I noticed is the guy who came and fixed it, he had another coupler, but when I started digging around, he left all the old lines in there. It was never about the coupler came loose underground. It was never an underground issue. It was an issue going behind my shed. So I pulled all that poly line out, a long string of poly line, the old poly line, the new poly line, and the second new poly line that was all beat up. I went to the hardware store, bought some solutions. So now I'm running the PVC through the shed. Well, I bought some PVC and I'm using it as a tunnel through the shed from the poly line. And then I bought these HVAC 3-inch in diameter, the elbows that are kind of, they're 45 degree and you use them to kind of twist or move air around or whatever. So I have those. I made a relief cut on both sides of the shed with my 3-inch hole saw. And I've got the duct, that's what it is, ducting. I've got the metal ducting into the 3-inch hole saw area. I put the metal ducting into the circle just so it has a place to grab, and then ran the rest of the ducting into the ground, and only then can you see the poly. So I buried the line on both sides, and it's not going to be a problem. I ran the test. Sprinklers work. We're never going to have that problem again. But that was a major pain in the ass. So before I got the hole saw, I went to Ace Hardware. And I always forget about Ace. I always go to Home Depot. I'm a Home Depot guy. Not because I think it's better, because it isn't. But it's convenient. So I always forget to go to Ace, which is down the other street, the opposite direction. I go on there and I'm looking at the hole saw attachments. And this girl walks up. Can I help you with something? I go, I know what I'm doing. I'm just trying to figure out which one of these I want. I'm not entirely sure. I go, the multi-surface, this one goes through everything, right? It's not just metal. Yep, goes through everything. I said, okay, cool. I'm just kind of looking at him, and she's standing right behind me, probably 4 feet off. I'm the only customer there in that area, and she's just standing there, and I'm like looking at me, and I'm sitting there thinking, what the hell is this chick doing? Is it like overbearing customer service? Am I a sus looking person? It's the weirdest thing, man. I just kind of gave her this weird look when I grabbed the attachment and went to the register and paid for my shit and got out of there. Coming up on today's episode, Fahad, which we haven't heard from in 2 or 3 years from the Builder's Corner. He sent an article to me, actually a podcast episode from the New York Times. It's called The Daily, which is a podcast they do. And the topic of it, your car may be spying on you. And so I listened to it, and we talked about that on this episode. You can actually watch the full-length video of this conversation on YouTube. So I'm starting to push everybody to YouTube, just because this RSS feed is on there now. So you can't, the RSS feed is pure audio, but I'm getting close to monetization on YouTube. And so 3 million people could listen to this on Spotify. 3 million people could listen to this on Apple. 3 million people can listen to this on Amazon. I won't make one fraction of a cent if that happens. They will. Amazon's going to get paid. Everybody else is going to get paid. On YouTube, if 3 million people listen to this episode, which they're not, but if 3 million people listen to this episode, that's a good day for me. So I'm pushing everybody to YouTube. So whether you like watching the videos or you just like listening to it, listen to it on YouTube. But you might hit those ads. So maybe you should stay where you're at. For over a decade, 4Wheel Online has been bringing the best truck accessories and truck parts to enhance the appearance and performance of all trucks and SUVs. They are dedicated to providing an extensive range of upgrades that will match any maker model on the road. Their truck products cover everything to give your truck a custom look and added functionality. Need a wheel and tire package? Head over and use the configuration tool. They carry all the major brands of wheels and tires, so go get outfitted today. Visit them online at 4Wheel Online. This conversation is brought to you by Cell Shop, an Arizona-based retailer that strives to be your destination of choice for wireless services, whether Arizona, Washington State, California, Texas, and Florida. They are an authorized AT&T dealer, so visit them at cellshop.us and get connected today. Fahad. So first off, so this was the Daily Podcast, which is a New York Times distribution. The host is Sabrina Tavernisi, and her guest is Kashmir Hill from the New York Times. And I found it very ironic because, I listened to it and I wanted to find out more information. So like any good publication, they put the articles and stuff in the podcast description. But you know what happens when you go to click on one of the articles? Mm-hmm. It takes you to a New York Times website where you have to register.
Yeah.
With an existing account or sign up for a free account to log in. So, of course, you can register through Google, right? Or you can register through Facebook. And there's a lot of irony there, isn't there?
No, absolutely. Yeah, I totally agree with you. They put a lot of their articles behind paywalls. Yeah.
Yep. Unfortunately. Yep. I've seen that before. Apple does that too with Apple News.
Yeah.
But the first story, and it wasn't a bad listen because I understood what they were doing, but it just felt like it was just so much fear mongering and predicating on the fears that people already have of Big Brother, society, crazy man following you, women, watch out. You're being tracked by your car, by your crazy ex-husbands, your boyfriends.
I agree with you on that one, especially that first story, because it was more of like an edge case on an individual's person's behavior and not like the technology, really, in my opinion. I think it is a behavioral thing. And I think for the most part, like the company, like Mercedes, for that example, was pretty well insulated from like their liability in terms of, like, you know, what they could have done in that situation, all things considered.
Right, because, you know, for the listeners, instead of making you guys listen to it, and I will put it in the notes, is, you know, you have an investigative reporter, and of course the title is Your Car Could Be Spying on You, but it was an unfortunate incident where she found a woman who drove a nice Mercedes C-Class, and nice whatever. It was her life, you know, everything, and, you know, unfortunately she fell into a domestic abuse situation with her husband, and he kept following her everywhere, and she couldn't figure out how. So they used the Mercedes app. He was using the Mercedes app to find out where she's at, GPS location, you know, locate my car, just like you would do with your iPhone. I have AccuraLink, and my wife's going to find out when she listens to this or watches it, if she does, or somebody else is going to tell her. But just like I can locate my NSX in the garage, which I did, and I actually got a notification from my home security. And I checked it, and it's because when I hit locate my NSX, the lights flashed on there as if I was lost in a parking lot. Or I wanted to make sure the tech wasn't going joyriding. Or it was one of the kids out there, and I want to make sure they're going to be home by 2 a.m. and they're not really at the liquor store, but instead they're at their buddy's house, right? So there's all sorts of use cases of locating your vehicle. And at least with my AccuraLink, it's activated by the VIN. And so, unfortunately, this woman's ex-husband was following her around, and she couldn't get him taken off. The judge ruled that she can have the car in the divorce, but it's still up to them to go to the Department of Motor Vehicles and get that title switched over.
Yeah.
Because the vehicle is still registered in her husband's name. So, of course, Mercedes, vehicle, owner, VIN, you know, like you said, they're going to protect themselves.
Right.
I had a very similar situation, not from a domestic abuse thing, but remember I had the OWL camera on my old NSX?
Mm-hmm.
So that thing had transferred ownership 2 or 3 times. But when it came down to the new owner wanting to register that app, that third-party car monitoring app, we had to jump through so many hoops just to get it. And I go, you know what, Anthony? Just get rid of it and just buy a new one. The new ones are better anyway. I have the first version, and the stuff that even me as the former owner had to go through to prove that I had sold the car was ridiculous. So I can kind of understand some of that craziness of trying to get stuff transferred over. And all you need is someone to just rub a couple brain cells together and figure out that the situation isn't typical and look at it a case to case basis. So I understand that.
Right. But
the whole point was, women, watch out. You're being monitored by your car. Like you just said, Fahad, that's not the case. It was a person versus person ordeal. And then at the same time, I've showed my wife everything that this app can do because she also has AccuraLink on her phone. She keeps losing the password, doesn't tell me that she doesn't auto start her car because she can't remember the password. I reset it. I tell it to her. She doesn't care to do it. And it's not a woman issue. It just depends on, you know, what do you put value in on your daily? You know, are you going to use the technology for your benefit, or are you just going to not use it? And then say, well, I didn't know I had it, or I don't know how to use it. This thing never works, and it hasn't worked in 6 months because I forgot the password, or blah, 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 blah. So that's a lot of this is on the person.
Yeah. Yeah. And like in that specific case that the New York Times covered, like he could have just as easily used like, you know, an AirTag to do the same level of tracking. You know?
Exactly.
So there's like a multitude of different technologies he could have used in that scenario. Is, you know, I think like as you guys listen to that episode, like the real interesting part was more of like the data monetization vehicle generated and driver behavior data.
I took a lot of notes on that too. So you said you had, you were with GM and you had, what really piqued my interest when you sent me the story is you had written some of that code. And I'm like, okay, well, I know you. You haven't been on this podcast in years, back when I had the Builder's Corner segment. But I know you to be an incredibly smart, intelligent person. And I'm like, oh, so somebody I know is involved in some of this type of stuff. What is it that you worked on with these things?
Yeah, so actually, so I was with GM for about 9 years. The last about 2.5-3 years, I was working for what they called First Mile. It was kind of the startup incubation hub of GM. So they would kind of like spool up like some sort of idea, tech related, and then see if they could turn it into a business, monetize it, and push it out. And so one of the things I worked on was it was called VOD, which was our vehicle originated data delivery group. And so we actually built these streams, like these big data streams, to pull data basically from the vehicle. So this was everything from like telemetry data, GPS data, driver interactions with like the infotainment system, all of that data, you know, at really short intervals, like within seconds, sometimes that the streams would be sending data to us, and like the, like how expansive and how like big the data sets were. They were massive. Like for, we're talking for like, you know, like relatively short drive, it could be millions of records of data.
Sure. And then what was the intended use of this data? And like I said, the intended use of the data, because data gets sold all the time. Data gets abused all the time.
Yeah. Well, so it was, so in the specific example, from the New York Times article, again, they talk about LexisNexis. It's kind of, you know, they're kind of known as a big data company, right? They they pull data from all sorts of sources and then they end up selling it. They repackage it, enhance it, and then sell it to whoever needs it. So one of the streams that I worked on was exactly that. So we would basically take all this vehicle data, if you opted in to like one of the smart driver programs, and they would take all that data, collect it, and send it off to LexisNexis, and LexisNexis would eventually use that in some sort of model that they would sell to insurance companies.
Nefarious way.
So there was a lot that kind of went into how they would, like what they would kind of pick apart in terms of like, here's like what we need to build our like financial model, like in order to, you know, kind of figure out how to price insurance for drivers based off of the behavior. So like some of the specifics, if you're interested in it, there was, so there was two types of smart driver programs in terms of like the data acquisition. So the initial one that was available, like in the early cars, they call it just like smart driver 1.0. So the events that it looked for were, there's about, I think, six primary events. The first one, of course, is the ignition event. So ignition on, off, that basically bookended the trip. So that's kind of when you started the trip and then when you ended it. But then like beyond that, like driver behavior related items were speed below 80 miles per hour, speed above 80 miles per hour, hard brake, hard acceleration, and then driver seatbelt change, like if it was, you know, if the seatbelt was engaged or not. And then for some of the later model GM cars that came out, there was a smart driver 2.0 like option. So there was a lot more data that they would kind of extract from those cars. So that included like ABS activity on like a per trip basis, stability control change, hard cornering, lane departure alert, forward collision alert, traction control system engagement, and then passenger seatbelt. And so these were all, they were all defined like based off like certain criteria, right? So like for hard acceleration, it was a basic calculation of meters per second squared. And then that's kind of how they determined if that was a hard acceleration event.
You know, you said something that piqued my interest, and I think I figured it out. This thing could monitor your seatbelts, and I'm thinking, how the hell would it do that? But it must be the electronic activity of the seatbelt sliding up the door before you latch it, or upon latch. Do you know?
It's on latch. Yeah, that's specifically what it's on. And then, like, say for, I think for like LexisNexis case, they would also get a little bit more data. It wasn't just like as simple as like, is the seatbelt on or off, but they would also kind of time like how many warnings were given before the driver.
Oh, sure.
Yes, fasten the seatbelt.
You know, my car won't even go reverse with the door open.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So anytime I want to back into a spot, and sometimes, you know, you open the door to kind of look to see where you're at, gotta close the door. You know, so these and that's safety. So we can't forget that. I mean, it's tracking, it's being sold for insurance, maybe some nefarious uses, but I have to believe that a lot of this stuff is in there for safety too and legal. So if someone's in an accident or something, or it's like, well, I had my seatbelt on, I didn't have my seatbelt on, or I applied the brakes and I squealed and I stopped, or I didn't stop in time, but I slammed on my brakes, you know, you can tell where the brakes, almost like a black box for a car, I would imagine.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And like, you know, a lot of the features that you kind of see on your end as a driver, like, you know, the car, you know, not being able to get out of first gear with the door open, a lot of that stuff makes sense. And like, I think that's a lot of good practice from like a security perspective. But I think the issue that a lot of people have with, you know, the aggregation of this data and the sale of this data is we're building these insurance models that have major financial impacts on people without context, right? So we don't know, like, if there's a hard braking event, you know, maybe there's a very good reason why that person braked as hard as they could or as hard as they did. And same with acceleration, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and I have to believe, because let's be clear, I'm not defending these practices at all, because I know that they can be used for, like I said, nefarious purposes. You know, I used to work at a repo house, and we didn't physically do the repos there, but we're the middleman. To where the bank, like GMAC Financial, you know, you have first payment default, you have people that aren't paying their bills, right? And so they would call us to retrieve their vehicles. And then we would have a fleet. I worked probably five or six different states from the call center. We had a fleet of repo drivers out there. And we use LexisNexis. And I abused the hell out of my LexisNexis. I'm just some low-paid employee. And at the time, I could see people's entire social security numbers. You know, we did spider searches. So I would click on a home address and it would open up everybody who was registered at that address in the history of that house. And then I could just from there, just imagine what you could do with that. Right.
Yeah.
And we use that to, we use that to find, okay, so Fahad, you haven't paid on your car in 6 months, you know, so now you have this $10,000 car bill out there and we can't find you because you keep hiding your car at different people's houses. And that's a huge financial implication. And so we would use that data to track down, okay, who are you calling all the time? Where are you going all the time? And we would call people and try to get the car. Now, how do we get the phone numbers? People don't realize this, but a lot of phone companies, after 3 months, they sell your data. And you actually sign up for that stuff when you sign up for your phone plan. Oh, all this stuff we acknowledge and we accept because we just figured nothing's going to happen to it. And LexisNexis isn't any different. So if they're doing bad stuff, they need to be fined or punished. You know, absolutely. I think one of the things that they said in the second story, which is more on the lines of what we're talking about, dealerships had some dealerships, and they talked about GM, but everybody I think has a little bit of this. They were incentivized to sign people up for OnStar. The more OnStar registrations you get, the more the dealer probably gets kickback. Now, we make no mistake, OnStar is there for safety purposes. Mm-hmm. My parents got in a car accident a few years ago, and their OnStar system, they live in the middle of East Jesus, Minnesota. The OnStar system called them to make sure they were okay and then notified the authorities, just like the commercials say. But I have to believe that they agreed for OnStar. I don't know why you wouldn't agree for OnStar, especially because when you buy a new car, a lot of times programs like OnStar are free for the first year or two, and then it's up to you to cancel it. So, hey, do you want to have this warning system that's going to notify the authorities in case you ever need, in case something happens to you, complimentary? Of course you're going to say yes. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on. And then, you know, they had mentioned that, of course, the smart driver thing. Insurance companies have been advertising this for years. I think Allstate was the big one at first. I think State Farm does it. And, you know, hard acceleration, hard braking. I have to believe it's not you accelerated hard and you braked hard five times in the last 6 months, you're an insurance risk. It starts looking at trends, right? Driver's trends. So You know, there's a famous case they're talking about. There's a class action lawsuit was filed. So I researched that independently because, of course, the link that's in the story wants you to go and sign up and submit more of your data, you know, for the New York Times. So I researched it and I found out it's one guy, a well-known businessman. And I'm sitting here, I was sitting here reading the thing, and this must be the guy. By the way, she was sourcing a lot of her information off of online forums, Reddit, car forums. So I, that kind of raised kind of a flag for me a little bit.
Yeah, that didn't seem like a super credible source for a lot of this data.
Right. Right. And it's not, you know, we're not trying to discredit Kashmir Hill. I understand what she's talking about is real. You know, the fear-mongering story, we both agree, is kind of crap. It sucks for the people that this is happening to, but you can't blame the cars. Your car is not spying on you. It's your husband or your wife or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah.
But this guy, Romeo Chico of Palm Beach County, claims he never signed up for OnStar system, which monitors drivers and alert systems, blah, blah, blah. We know what OnStar does. But this must be the guy that she said his insurance was doubled and he couldn't even get insured. So I have to question, what the hell is he doing?
Right. Yeah, and I think also because like that preliminary data that like General Motors sends over to LexisNexis, they do a lot of enrichment. There's a lot of like thresholds that you, as like the you know end recipient of the data, that you can define. And GM had like a lot of suggestions, right? So it wasn't just like you know a hard acceleration event, but there was also other kind of like other elements you can kind of couple with that. So like, was it hard acceleration? But then also like you know what's the delta between the vehicle's speed and the posted speed limit in that area? Was it on a highway? Was it not on a highway? Because they recommend like different thresholds. Like, so if you're speeding on a highway, they recommend, you know, like trigger some sort of event or some sort of like, you know, action based off of a speed that's like in 16 kilometers per hour in excess of the posted speed limit, right? So they kind of factor that in as well. But yeah, like you said, it's based off of a trend and pattern. But like, I can't speak to how LexisNexis specifically does it. But,
sure.
You know, I would imagine though, like if they're not like doing the drivers any favors like, when they're doing that modeling, right? Because their customer's insurance company, and the insurance company is going to want like a safer, something that's like, you know, financially more, a greater incentive for them to kind of err on like a safer side.
Right. Now, I guess at the end of the day, you know, with his, and this isn't, he filed it, but it's not, it looks like it hasn't really done much yet. We all agree to things that we don't like. Nobody reads the fine print.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And now if you've noticed, I mean, how could you not? Every time you go to a website, even if it's on your phone, you're presented with the opportunity to accept all cookies, accept some cookies, or accept no cookies. And so, you know, that's got to be on a federal level. And this is specific to the state of Florida. But if it is being erroneous, if it is, if he is being, you know, treated unfairly, then you know this lawsuit needs to happen. But I'm not there, but you know you have to look at the information that's provided to you, because there's a lot of stuff we don't know. There's a lot of speculation.
Right, exactly. I do think that like typically I would assume a company with like GM, LexisNexis, and these insurance companies, they probably have pretty expensive terms of service that, you know, I think it'd probably hold up in court, all things considered. Again, like we'll see how it plays out, but I think they'll probably be protected from that. And yeah, like you said, it's hard to kind of like, you know, nobody really reads any terms of service, right? They're just, the way they're designed, the way they're displayed, they're not really meant or expected to be read. They just, you know, it's the company just kind of covering themselves. The best you could do, I feel like, is take a terms of service. If you're, you know, kind of wary of it, drop it into ChatGPT and have it give you a quick summary and highlight points that, you know, might be of interest for you.
Never thought about that. That's mighty interesting. You know, please summarize this 22 pages of gibberish that's designed to bend me over backwards, but to protect you. The last thing just on here is, and this is what I kind of figured. Florida Secretary of State records show that Romeo Chico is a well-known businessman in Boynton Beach and head of a payroll services company. So this isn't some random person. This is someone that has a little bit of money. I know a guy, not me, but I know a guy that modified the hell out of his car. Everyone knew he modified the hell out of his car. He drove around like a bat out of hell all the time because he loved what he did. And at some point when nobody else was around, we were together and he left the event. But he never made it home. Well, he made it home, his car. He basically blew his motor. And yeah, became irate with the manufacturer, with service, because they wouldn't warranty him a new motor, even though he had all the parts removed to where it was almost stock. And, you know, he threatened to sue them. I haven't heard much about it since then. But everybody who knows this person knows you blew your car up because you did everything to it you shouldn't have. And, you know, this, we don't know what's going on with Romeo Chico. And I think I'm going to monitor this. I like to monitor stuff like this over time just to kind of see what happened with it. I'm not advocating for him and I'm not saying he needs to go away. I just need more information. But
for sure,
I want to thank you for throwing this on me. It was good to listen to. Sure, I got triggered a little bit on some of the stuff. But at the end of the day, you know, these apps that are supposed to be tracking for safety, you know, if they're being sold for nefarious reasons to people to, you know, affect my insurance, your insurance, we need to take a look at that.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree on that. Yeah, that's kind of why I think I brought it up to your attention, because I think you find it interesting. And yeah, a lot of the audience too, you know, a lot of us drive cars and, you know, for enjoyment, right? And it's one of the things that's worth keeping in mind.
Yeah, I know you've liked to enjoy some of your road trips. So yeah,
exactly.
Thanks for Fahad.
Yeah. Thanks, Jay. It's good talking to you.
Yep. I want to thank Fahad for joining the show today. As stated in the interview, that article or that podcast episode is going to be in the description if you want to listen to it and find yourself getting just as angry as I was of the craziness. Oh, your car is stalking you. Women, watch out. Is it the car or is it the crazy ex? Probably the crazy ex. Yeah, so I could look on my AccuLink app and see if Yvette's still at the grocery store. I've done that before. Where it's like, hey, I'm going to go to she's in our daughter's old house. It's like, hey, I'm leaving in a minute. And I'm like an hour and a half later, it's like, well, you're not here yet. Have you at least left there? So that's, you know, I don't obviously stalk my wife, but the location services are there. You just can't abuse them. You can't blame the manufacturers. You can't blame the app store. You opt in most of the time, except for the people who got the OnStar who claim they didn't opt in, or the shady dealerships that may activate it for you. I get that. But for things like the Mercedes app, the AccuLink app, other apps, track my iPhone app. You know, on your iPhone, you could track your family too if they're all in the same family plan, but they have to opt in. So pros and cons, right? I want to thank Wright Honda and Wright Toyota, 411.com, SalesShop Wireless Services, AutoCannon, officially licensed Honda and Acura gear, Patreon business supporters, Cui Automotive out of Warren Garden, Florida, Automotive Specialty Tool out of Owings Mills, Maryland. Ramsey from Automotive Specialty Tools will be here this weekend coming up for a day. Pell Construction out of Conowing, Michigan, Big House Small Home Design out of Ashburn, Virginia, and Traverse City, Michigan. Shaping Success with Wes Tankersley out of Boise, Idaho. Catch us on One Drink Wednesday, every Wednesday, almost 7 o'clock Pacific time. Follow us at One Drink Wednesday on TikTok and Instagram. If you're a musician, help the podcast upgrade, join the Patreon for as little as $3 a month and get access to bonus audio as well as show swag. Shout out to Mark Stoneman, Catherine Cox, Eddie Ramos, Richard Grace, Byron Jones, Bo Jung, Alex Gumina, Drew Buckley, and Yasu Chiba. Email the show, hardparkerpodcast@gmail.com. Follow me on Instagram @jfinney. Join the Hard Parker Violations Facebook group. Join the Hard Parking channel on my Instagram. Because I can't grow without you telling the world how great this show is. So let's do this. Let's grow this thing together. I'll talk to y'all next week. Get over to YouTube.
Now it's stripping time.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
Shut up!